You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Thursday, August 28th. Pacific County officials are still waiting on review panels regarding two in-custody deaths at the Pacific County Jail. It has been more than 2 years since Crystal Greenler died while in custody at the jail, and 10 months since Curtis Kirschbaum also died while in custody. At a Pacific County Board of Commissioners meeting earlier this week, tensions were apparent between Sheriff Daniel Garcia and County Chief Administrative Officer Paul Plackinger over expectations on both review panels. A report on Greenler's death that was completed by the Thurston County Sheriff's Office was given to Pacific County Jail Services Director Jim Byrd earlier this month. Plackinger alleged that report was mismanaged. Washington state law mandates a panel made up of a team be assembled to review an in-custody death within 120 days of the incident to evaluate policies and form recommendations to prevent future incidents. The report by the Thurston County Sheriff's Office was completed by just one individual, Lieutenant Kenneth Clark. Sheriff Garcia clarified this week that his agency's in-custody death review panel had not been completed for either death. Pacific County issued a second formal extension of the reviews at the end of July, pushing them out another 60 days. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. A fire burning in a remote part of southeastern Lane County, Oregon, has grown to 7,400 acres. KLCC's Zach Ziegler reports.
In a video update Wednesday morning, management team member John Campbell says the Emigrant Fire's location is making containment efforts difficult.
So the fire is sitting in the old Tumblebug burn scar from 2009. A lot of hazards out there, a lot of snags that have been falling for the last couple days.
Because of that, managers are planning containment lines farther away from the fire than they normally would, so the fire will likely continue to grow in the coming days. They are particularly focused on cutting lines to the fire's north and west to keep it from private timberland. I'm Zach Ziegler reporting.
Oregon wildlife officials have identified more than 320 species that need conservation efforts the most. KLCC's Nathan Wilk explains.
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is revising its State Wildlife Action Plan. The newest version would list nearly 30 more species in the greatest need category when compared to the plan from 2016. That indicates that a species has a small or shrinking population, or is otherwise at risk. Srishti Kamal is the deputy director at the Western Environmental Law Center. She argues the additions show that current conservation strategies in Oregon aren't fully working.
This is the most direct proof that species decline is a serious problem in Oregon, and without intervention, this will be a roadmap to species extinction in Oregon as well.
Oregon must now submit its revision of the plan to federal officials for approval. I'm Nathan Wilk, reporting.
Oregon's incoming WNBA team, the Portland Fire, will welcome its new general manager on September 15th. Vanya Chenuitz has spent the last year with San Francisco's new WNBA team. She told reporters in Portland on Tuesday that launching a successful franchise means connecting with the local community.
And inviting new fans that might not join our mission yet. But most importantly, we want to create an environment for athletes where they can not only survive, but thrive.
Chenuitz is leading the search for a head coach and will help build the roster. The Portland Fire tip off next year. The WNBA season runs from May through September. Every parent's goal for their children is to teach them life skills that help them launch into adulthood, but that gets complicated when a child has a disability. Many families rely on Medicaid, a federal program, for support. KUOW's Ruby De Luna has the story of one Bellevue family and their fear of what the Trump administration's recent safety net cutbacks could mean for their son.
The Medicaid waiver program provides support for nearly every aspect of Nate Nemhauser's life, whether he's getting ready for school, taking part in enrichment activities, or getting ready for his work shift at Pagliacci Pizza.
All right, let's wash your hands.
What? Nate is 21 years old. He has a diagnosis of autism and an intellectual disability. Communication and concentration are difficult for him. His job coach, Megan Szymanski, helps him clock in and stay on task, folding pizza boxes and stocking the drink cooler.
You're good.
Ow!
It's okay.
Nate started work in November. His mother, Rachel Nemhauser, says he started with just one two-hour shift a week. Then it became two shifts. Now it's up to three.
He has this rich, busy life, and these Medicaid waivers are there to help make it happen, make it a reality.
Many people associate Medicaid with health care for low-income families, but it's more than that. In the early 1990s, the federal government gave states flexibility to use Medicaid funds for non-medical services. The goal was to allow recipients who are elderly or with disabilities to stay home and within their communities instead of relying on institutional care. Nemhauser applied for a waiver when Nate was a toddler. She remembers struggling to provide care. His needs were intensive, requiring specialized services like speech and behavior therapies.
I was starting to wonder, do I have to find another place for him to live? I don't know if I can care for him. And that's a really low place to be.
After a 9-year wait, Nate was granted a waiver at age 12. He receives about $6,000 a year in aggregate funds. Nemhauser says that money is spent on programs to help with Nate's daily needs. He requires one-on-one support from specialized providers who are experienced working with people with autism and other disabilities. He needs similar support to participate in recreational activities. The family has to decide how to allocate those funds.
If he's spending more time getting employment support, he doesn't need as much recreational activities, but there's never enough.
According to the Washington State Healthcare Authority, nearly 2 million Washington residents are enrolled on Medicaid. The agency is still assessing the impacts of the recently approved federal budget, but it's projecting up to 320,000 enrollees to lose coverage. Supporters of the cuts argue current Medicaid spending is unsustainable, adding that the system's eligibility requirements have been lax, leading to fraud and abuse.
I am not seeing these systems being misused. I'm seeing people like desperate for help and accessing these as life-saving measures.
Nemhauser says Nate is at a crossroads. He has 1 year of school left. They're trying to map out how he'll find social opportunities and ways to fill his time outside of work. But she says it's hard to make plans when it's not clear yet what steps the state will take and whether it'll allow Nate enough support to live the life he wants.
He wants a job and a house and a girlfriend and a cat. Like, it's not, he's not asking for a lot.
Back at Pagliacci Pizza, Nate has just clocked out of his work shift. He's about to enjoy one of the perks of the job, a slice of pizza and a Coke.
All right, Nate, what kind of pizza are you going to get today?
Pizza.
Do you ever get anything else on your pizza?
No.
The hope is that one day, Nate will no longer need a job coach at work as he presses on toward his goal of independence. I'm Ruby DeLuna, reporting.
You are listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at KMUN.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@KMUN.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at KMUN.org.